Okay. Gonna get some verses, Brian. Get Matthew 10, 37 through 39. Matthew 10, 37 through 39. I want to get some more scriptures. Brian Mitchell, get Matthew 10, 37. Andy, Mark 1, 18. Dwayne, 1 Kings 19, 21. Going to get here. Robert, Colossians 3, 17. Neil, John 21, 16. Zach, Matthew 10, 39. Yeah, that's the first time. Matthew 10, 39. And David Cutter, Matthew 12, 18. Okay, we've been looking out of Matthew chapter 10, which is a launching passage, and we're using this as a Jesus is teaching men who are being launched into the ministry and giving them some practical instructions. So we've been going through this, calling this the master's class on pioneering. Just have this one and one more to go, and we'll finish. We've been looking at the issue of pioneering, and so we've looked at all kinds of issues that this passage deals with. This one today is we're going to deal with the cost of calling, and that's what he emphasizes. Matthew 10, 37 through 39.
He who loves his father or mother more than me is not worthy of me, and he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me. He who finds his life will lose it, and he who loses his life for my sake will find it.
Okay, the cost of calling. Let's begin. Let's talk about the wrong ideas of ministry. And so Jesus, in sending these men into the ministry, he's very careful to address. You have teaching that is correcting incorrect ideas. And so part of this has to do with people's view of what the ministry is going to be like or what the ministry is all about. So one of the things he's addressing here is the idea that ministry is all about personal benefits. And so if you observe over time, you see that pastors who dress decent, you know, I wear decent clothes, I don't dress like a slob when I come to church, and I travel, I have a car that runs, that's an amazing thing, and I get to preach publicly, and your name can be on a conference brochure or somebody's website sometimes. And so sometimes you have, it's a tendency that people can look at that and think, well, I would like that. That would be cool. Where did you get to travel? Wow, I would like to travel. That's kind of, the fellowship's version of, you know, join the Navy, see the world is here. I go in the ministry, get to see the world. That would be something cool. I would like that. People would get to know me. I'll be called pastor, and so, but it's in terms of benefits. What am I going to get out of this? On the other hand, is you have the idea of some that ministry is would be a nice thing to try. Most people in life, they move through interests. Most people, they don't settle on just one thing in life for the rest of their life. They give themselves to. In other words, they have an interest in guns, and then it's sports and football and bowling and the computers and it's just kind of that it catches their interest for a while. I would like to do that, and if you're not careful, ministry could be like that. It's like, yeah, that would be something interesting. I've done the guns and camping thing. Now I think I would like to get into the ministry. So if you get into the ministry just on something to try, or you get into the ministry and personal benefits, I promise you that'll cause you problems. Because the very simple question is, what happens if whatever the benefit you think, if is it Is it fame, numbers, money, respect? Is it an enjoyable time? What happens if you don't get that? So what happens if you're not making money? What happens if you don't get numbers? What happens if no one even knows you're alive? So then does that mean then ministry, wait, this is a raw deal. I didn't get into ministry for this. And so that can be very disorienting. I had someone make a comment to me one time. They came overseas. They were a missionary, and they made the comment, I thought that when I went overseas that I would become a hero. Well, that's not a good reason to go overseas. And so what he was experiencing is that there's work and trouble. And it wasn't going like he thought. So if it's about personal benefit, I promise you, then you will get very, it will mess with your head. It becomes discouraging. And then, of course, what happens is that you get people who they become embittered because I didn't get my magic pumpkin. I thought I was going to get that, even though God never said that. We never gave them a contract. Nobody promised them that. But in their head, they thought this or that. And so this is exactly what Jesus is addressing, as he says, you got to make sure you don't have wrong ideas about the ministry. So let's talk then about the cost of calling. If Jesus was a salesman, then he would gloss over the difficulties. If he was a salesman, it would be like those commercials you hear on the radio. It would be like he'd be telling them, you're going to be popular, you're going to make impact, people are going to know your name, and they're going to talk real fast. Wait, what did you say? Oh, don't worry about that. That was at the end of the commercial, but that's not what Jesus does. So, what he emphasizes to people who are going to ministry is calling has cost. Ministry has cost. And now he spells it out. Number one, there is a family cost. Matthew 10:37.
He who loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And he who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me.
Okay, so Jesus, remember the context of Matthew 10. This is not simply the overall, this principle applies, of course, to all of salvation, but he's applying it now to the ministry, to those who are going into following the call of God. And he says, family. That is a cost. So, for some people, that is that family may not approve of calling. Why would you do that? Why would you waste your life in that? You could have been something. You know, we had it all planned out. You're going to take over the family business. You could have educated yourself. You could have this or that. So they're not pleased with your decision. Jesus says that's a cost. You love father, mother, your family. If that's more important to you, what they think and what they want, then don't do it. Or the cost in family is separation. This is one of the lessons of ministry. You can't take your family with you. And that's Abraham, when God first spoke to him, he made that mistake. He tried to take his family with him. That's not going to work. And all he did was lose time. And it took him longer to do the will of God. In 1986, my wife and I left her family. My family was living there at the time, but left her family. 1986. This is 2019. So 33 years later. In 33 years, we've spent one Christmas with her family. That's it. We live on the other side of the world. We've never, there's family, we get, you know, now it's nice that we have, when we, you got to understand that when we went, we've gone places where it cost $5 a minute to be in touch. There was no such thing as email, you couldn't send a text, none of that existed, and so that's just a cost. My wife has borne that more than me, but that's what it costs. You can't have, well, I'll do the will of God, but can mom and my sister and nieces and nephews? No. you love family more than me, you can't do it. That's just the way it is, and you got to factor that in. Number two, there's a personal cost. Matthew 10, 38. Can I give that to somebody? Somebody have it.
And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me.
Okay. He who does not take his cross or take up his cross. So, this is... the idea of taking up the cross, you understand that Jesus, when he was going to die, they made condemned prisoners carry their own cross. And so this is not a good advertisement for the ministry. Say, how would you like to be in the ministry? You know? Yeah, take up your cross. Be like, what? And so the point that he's saying is invariably answering the call to ministry means something has to die. Something that you love, something that you would prefer. There are things that get in the way and they'll just have to die. That's all there is to it. And so he's deliberately using things that are perhaps not enjoyable. So it's very simple. Jesus says anything that gets in the way of Jesus, it needs to go. It needs to die. And that's not a right or wrong. You know, if you're dealing drugs, you know, that's another sermon, right? We don't have to talk about that today. But he's saying anything. Is that getting in the way of Jesus? Is that getting in the way of calling? Then it needs to die. That's all there is to it. It's a cost. Now, that will work out differently in different people. For one person, that will be financial. They have financial ideas that have to die. For others, it's their plans. That'll have to die. For some, it's relationships. It's not the same in every person. Jesus deliberately didn't spell out it'll cause this and that and that, because it may be totally different for different people. But that is a crucial thing. There is personal cost. So what Jesus is wanting is, if you're going to do the will of God with eyes wide open, ask yourself, what would get in the way of the will of God in my life? And he says, deal with it. Get rid of it. Lay it on the altar. Because calling requires our highest priority. That is the whole issue. Ministry has to be your life. And if that's just one of the things you're considering in life, it will never work. Don't do it. Because it absolutely will require your life. Mark 1:18.
They immediately left their nets and followed him.
Okay, they forsook their nets and followed him. So nets here, you know, you've heard sermons that can be identity. It was a business. It was security. That was an issue. When I went in the ministry, I had been following God and in the call of God in various places, none of which paid very much at all. And in the meantime, I would be, you know, be speaking to friends or family. They'd be talking about how they bought a second house and a third house. And I have the, you know, all these. So it's like, wait, but I'm following the call of God. This is one of the things. I had to decide, am I going to put security first and let the will of God suffer, or am I going to do the will of God and trust God that later on that God can do that? 1 Kings 19:21.
And he returned back from him and took a yoke of oxen and slew them and boiled their flesh with the instruments of the oxen and gave unto the people, and they did eat. Then he arose and went after Elijah and ministered unto him.
Okay, and so here it's interesting. So again, this would be business, this would be finances, security, family, all these kinds of things. And it's interesting that he kills the yoke of oxen. So in some ways, he makes it so he can't. He doesn't say, hold this for a few months, and if the ministry thing doesn't work out, I'll be back to get him. He kills them. And that's a definite separation in there. Final thought, let's talk about love and reward. So Jesus shows us that the only thing that will keep you going in ministry in the long term is love. Again, back to the wrong ideas. If it is fame, everybody will know me, then when you don't get famous, you won't make it. You won't want to continue. If it's respect, people are going to call me pastor. They're going to listen to every word I say. That's a pipe dream. And so when you realize we are not listening to a word you say, so what? That's not going to keep you going. If it's money, what happens if you're not making money? It was years before I made anything other than poverty wage. So what's going to keep you? So he deals with the issue of love. Verse 37, if you love family more than me. So the issue he's saying is, it's love for Jesus. That is the only thing that's going to keep you in the long term, because money goes up and down, respect goes up and down, fame goes up and down. You know, that's not a constant. It is love for Jesus. You have to maintain this, a sense of gratitude. This is why you hear the Apostle Paul when he writes, you know, think about all the deep things the Apostle Paul could talk about. You know, there's a guy who saw heaven, for crying out loud. He's caught up into heaven. And yet, what does he talk about? He's like, I thank God that he saved me. Someone who doesn't deserve it. Because that's ultimately, it's interesting, people who maintain a sense of gratitude over what God has done, then that is what keeps them over the long haul. Colossians 3:17.
And whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him.
Okay, you're doing it in the name. I'm doing it for Jesus, not for me. And I'm giving thanks while I'm doing it. And he says that is what's going to keep you. That's what enables you to survive over the long haul. This is the whole story of Peter when Jesus meets him by the shore after he says he's going fishing. The issue before, it's fighting about who's going to be the greatest. Right before, in their minds, it's going to be important jobs, well paid. And so then after his failure and after Jesus' resurrection, Jesus deals with him about love. John 21:16.
He said to him again a second time, Simon, son of Jonah, do you love me? He said to him, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. He said to him, tend my sheep.
Okay, so feed my sheep is what he's speaking here. And so he says, he doesn't say feed my sheep if you're well paid. Feed my sheep if it's going easy. Feed my sheep if people respect you. He says, you love me, then feed my sheep. That is what keep, because people are fickle. I've had people who at one time they said, I can't believe you're like the father I never had, and then, you know, then they accuse me of being the Antichrist later on. And that's people. You just so I can't put my calling on people or money that comes and goes, but God always deserves our love. So there's a great promise here found in verse 39, Matthew 10:39.
He who finds his life will lose it, and he who loses his life for my sake will find it.
Okay, so he says if it's about your desires, if it's money, fame, success, people approval, he says you will lose. That's not going to work. You're going to lose your true purpose. You have people who turn away from calling because they think, no, I need to do this thing or that thing. They lose purpose. They lose satisfaction. They discover that it's not satisfying. Jesus says losing is the path to finding. This is one of those paradox things that are opposites, and yet they're true. So if you take a loss, all right, I'm going to lose family connection. I'm going to lose my plans. I'm going to lose maybe financially for a time. He says that is how you're going to find yourself. You're going to find who you're meant to be. And it's a wonderful thing to know that you're in the will of God. And when you're doing the will of God and you understand this is what I was made to be, if you've ever gotten off track and started doing something else, when you return to this, you say, Jesus says, you find yourself. This is what I was made to be. And it's not just an option in life of many things I could do. This is what God made me to do. then we find usefulness. It's a wonderful thing at the end of the day to feel useful. Pastor Mitchell is almost 90 and he still works his butt off. Why? Because he feels useful. That's why they say the average length of time people live after retirement is 3.5 years, because they lose purpose. So it's a wonderful thing to feel useful. And finally, you find the pleasure of God. He says, you're doing this for my sake. Matthew 12, 18.
Behold my servant whom I have chosen, my beloved in whom my soul is well pleased. I'll put my spirit upon him, and he will declare justice to the Gentiles.
Okay, so here is a prophecy that is applied to Jesus Christ, in whom my soul is well pleased. That is the ultimate, is God. Money may come and go, fame may come and go, plans may come and go. I want to feel your pleasure. I want to know that you are happy with me in as I follow your will. That is the purpose of God that he has for us. Okay, we're going to open for questions. Caleb, sorry, can you go to the office and get the media room and get the papers? I put them out there. Thanks. Okay, questions. Something you want to ask about the cost of calling.
How would you approach, one of the aspects of cost of calling is, being able to say no to things that conflict with ministry and outreaches and things of that nature. So for instance, sports for the kids and things of that nature, when we were really starting to weigh that, the understanding was, we wouldn't be able to do this, we can do Wednesday, we can go Saturday. How would you balance that out if you had to approach a situation where, there was going to be something that came up or completely conflicted with, outreach and calling? How would you go about that, or maybe deal with it with, Emily, if there was something they wanted to do or something like that?
Yeah, so, the issue, first of all, if you use common sense, is that there may be occasional occasional issues that you could weigh on a case by case. But one of the things in life, certainly with children, is that if you school and sports, they will have your entire life revolve around that. So one of the issues that you have to remember is that you are training your children life lessons. You're not teaching them sports lessons, art lessons. You're teaching them life lessons. So one of the things is you are teaching them that we put priority on Jesus. That's a life lesson. That is so much bigger than just any individual issue. And so that becomes the issue. You can participate in anything as long as it doesn't conflict, because in our house we put Jesus first. That's what's important to us, and that's how you're going to live too. When you become an adult, you can make your own choices.
A lot of times, I know pastors, after a while, they get off support, they work a secular job. And so do you have any advice for just, trying to make sure that your secular job, whatever it may be, doesn't start taking priority and doesn't start, becoming an issue, conflicting with your ministry?
Well, how do you keep it? But number one, by deciding what you're there for. Are you there to make money, or are you there to build the work of God? The greatest thing you can do is to prepare in advance. The greatest thing you can do is, number one, be debt-free. If you're debt-free, you're going to be ahead of the game. Okay? My wife and I went out. We could fit everything we own in the back of a pickup, basically. That's fine. But we also didn't owe anybody any money, so we could live very cheaply. That was very advantageous to us because we were extremely flexible. So debt, number one, if you're debt-free. Secondly, is determine that you will allow God to bless you in his timing rather than forcing it first. So what that means is that if you have to have everything, if your wife is the pampered princess and has to have everything, has to live in a perfect environment and drive a certain car and, you know, be able to have this or that. And if you're the pampered prince, that's going to cause you problems. So dealing with that before you ever go is the greatest thing. That will then determine the types of job that you take, the hours that you work, all those kinds of things. So when I went into the ministry, I had a trade that I could work, but if I did my trade, I couldn't do the ministry. So we had a slaughterhouse in our town where they killed sheep and cows, and so you could go back in 1986 you could go as a day laborer for $10 an hour. And I had a very powerful job scooping out lamb brains. That was very, very exciting job. But I could do that. I could just pick up work for the day because of how cheaply we lived. That was the issue. So, you know, how do you do that is if you don't, if you have debt, you can't do that, right? I have to have a certain amount to live. Then of course, it's when you get there, what kind of place you're going to live in. You live in a lesser. I lived on top of a Italian deli for a while. And, you know, lived in places that we could afford. So that meant that I was very flexible in my work time. Yeah. And finally, I did contract work. I worked out where I could do subcontract work, making stained glass windows, and I could do that on my own time. So.
You break free from that mindset of trying to be safe and becoming a risk taker for God instead? Because recently I quit my job because they were putting me on Sundays and they were going to start putting me on Wednesdays and Saturdays, just completely. So I quit my job because I wanted to serve God. But how do you break free from that that mindset of trying to just be safe and secure all the time? I mean, it's great to have that ability to be secure in your finances and everything. But I'm just trying to see where there's a line, I guess, between risk-taking and being safe. Is there a balance between those two?
The line between risk-taking and being safe. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know that the line is between risk-taking and being safe. There's a line between risk-taking and being stupid. That's a different, those are two different issues. So, you know, you got to imagine when people ask a question, I'm in my mind, you got to imagine I have how many years of variables that you can have. So, taking risk is first of all dependent on when you have a confidence in who God is. You know who God is, then things aren't really a risk if He tells you to do it. It's not really a risk then. Because the God of the universe backs up what He tells me to do. That's a logical issue. Now, does that mean it's easy? No. Is it terrifying at times? Absolutely. So, you know, you got to break down, so you got to know God. Secondly, you have to settle the pride issue. Because often what we're unwilling to risk is often, those are pride issues. I'm not willing to risk looking foolish, then the ministry is not for you. You will look foolish. I mean, that's just the way it is. I'm not willing to risk failing, which is really about what? About pride, isn't it? That's the every pioneer learns to dread that question at conference or when they meet people. Is that, so how are things going? And they wish that a hole would open up and swallow them right then, because there are times it's not going very well at all. So, but you got to settle that in pride. There's a lot of things is that you, so risk is logical if God's involved, and risk is acceptable if you're willing to humble your pride. Those are two things. So now then you're getting into specifics of finances. Then you get into common sense. Saving is a biblical principle. And again, if you temper your appetites. You know, my wife and I, we didn't make much money. We still saved. So that's another issue. Saving is wise. So you don't just blow everything in the name of, that's not a risk, that's just bad stewardship. So then you get into, you know, jobs and whatever. That is the issue, that it's not worth it to sacrifice your calling for a job. Got to decide what you want to be in life. Once you settle what you're supposed to be, everything else, every decision is a God decision then. Right? Every decision. You know, I think I'll probably mention this in the sermon today. Does that take me closer or farther away from the will of God? Simple. If it takes me farther away, it's not God. You shouldn't do it. It settles a lot of things. Right? Somebody else.
Is the cost thing, is that something that you believe God will deal with you about in his timing? Or do you think that's something you should seek and try to find out if there's things that you're maybe holding on to or beliefs that you have that are really not reality before venturing too far in ministry? Oh, I always thought that I would have that, but...
Yeah, I guess, you know, I guess it always helps to be a thinker. You know, what are your ideas of ministry? What is it you perceive will happen if you go into ministry? And is that something that you're making up? Or is that God's word? Yeah, I guess, you know, there is that level of contemplation. You know, the thing about ministry overall is that you have no idea what the future will hold. It's not like God lays out the whole plan for your life and says, and here is the cost. Ladies, tick, 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 you know, door number two. It's not like that. It's daily, isn't it? The cost, what's the cost? The cost is right now. And then, okay, all right, I'll do that. But then you'll find that the cost will be different or greater or another area later on. But overall, you just have to settle. I'm going to give my life to the calling of God. That's bottom line. No matter the cost, yeah. Yep.
So you said that you kind of got distance when you went into the ministry from your wife's family.
Uh-huh.
Is that something that you just have to give up, or, you know, being with family, or is there a balance between keeping calling your priority and trying to maintain that?
Well,
family life?
Yeah. No, I mean, we didn't diss her family. It wasn't like we said we never want to see you again. It was just simple. We moved the first time in ministry 3,000 miles away. It was like moving from San Diego to Tampa, Florida. It was long, you know, I moved to the island of Tasmania. So it was a simple geographic distance at first. So, we tried to keep contact, even so, we do that, you know, back then it just was very difficult. It was more expensive and it was more difficult to do. That's changed somewhat. You're able to be more connected these days, which is more helpful. But but it's not a matter of I don't like you. It's just a simple matter of Jesus comes first. And so we'll work it in. We'll see you when we can. And that's, Lisa's father, when he was not saved, that would upset him. We're coming, and so I want you to do this or that. It's like, no, we're there for conference. We'll see you weekend before, weekend after, during the day. We'll make a plan, but no, we're not. And so that would upset him. He would punish us for for a long time. We didn't go along with him. He would, you know, he would punish us in different ways. But then ultimately, making a stand, he wound up getting saved as well. So you don't lose in the long run. God honors that. I didn't do that to be rude. We weren't trying to be rude. It's just a practical, there are things that you can do and there are things that you cannot do. You know? And so we try the best to honor and stay connected, but I mean it's a long way. My wife now lives 6,000 miles from her family, or more, I don't know, maybe more, 8,000 or something. Long way away. I mean, that's life. Her mother's 80th birthday is coming up in October, and she has weighed up the things that she has to do this year in traveling and has made a decision that she can't go to her mother's 80th birthday. Do we wish we could do that? Sure. But unfortunately, that's not going to work out. So she'll make a plan and see her another time. Yep.
So in regards to Lisa's father getting saved, would you say that the reward outweighs the cost in the long run?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that's what you have to trust God with that. Because the fear, anytime you make a stand, the fear is that making a stand will drive them away from God. They were going to get saved, but then you wouldn't let them drink booze. You know, all the different stands is, you know, Lisa's dad, he came to stay with us in South Africa with his girlfriend. And we said, no, you're not sleeping together. Not in our house. Bring him booze that we don't drink here. No, we're not having booze with him, with our meal. We're not drinking booze at the wedding. Well, what will my friends think? But it's our wedding. That's too bad. And so we had a significantly lower, our wedding was significantly lower cost than her sister's because of that. That's life. But you have to trust that God, those are things, even though he would get upset, there's something about that. Any of her family that hassled us over the stands that we made, you find in later years, those very stands are the ones that they wind up respecting. That you've stood for that. And again, we don't do so rudely. You foul pervert. What's the matter with you, you booze-hound drunkard? You can say things kindly but firmly. But you trust God. That's ultimately. God honors people who make a stand for him.
I could see how someone that is getting sent out that had a business previously, it'd be better to get rid of it so they can focus on God completely. Mm-hmm. But what is your thoughts on and wisdom on that aspect of a business? Would you always suggest to get rid of it, or do you? Or
well, the issue is, I mean, you can't give a one size fits all answer, but the issue is building a church is incredibly consuming of your time and energy, and so it's not going to be possible to have a business. I mean, you have different levels. I suppose you could have guys that they have a business that is so successful they could leave a manager and that could be how they're being paid while they're laboring, I guess. But most people, that's not the way it's going to work. It would be distracting. So you have to take it on a case by case. So, but if you're going to, I'm just trying to picture the practical realities for most people. If you were in a new city trying to work a job, and have your family, and build a work for God, and you're still having involvement in a business, I would think you know something will snap.
Yep. When we were overseas, I had four family members pass away.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously not able to come back and go to the funerals, and ended up with people that were very upset at us about that. What advice do you give to people that find themselves in that circumstance?
Yeah, I mean, again, that's one of the issues. If you're doing the will of God, then it's a matter of you have to trust God with them. Because God, if I do your will, you're going to have to help me with my family ultimately. And again, in anything we do for God, we have to trust that God will then work in people's hearts for that. But the practical is you can't, as you appreciate, being overseas. Number one, you can't afford it financially. Most people can't afford it financially. Number two, you can't afford the time. You know, my sister died when we were building the building in South Africa. I couldn't come to my sister's funeral. I wasn't happy about that, but that was just the way life was. So, yeah, you know, again, that's the issue is, the reason why Jesus says loving father and mother more than me is that people will be upset with you on 100 different issues. They will be. That is a real possibility. So,
after your first point, the wrong concept.
Mm-hmm.
We know that discipleship really does confront our egos, our motives. We watch others. So after you went back out, after you did go out, were there issues you never thought of here that all of a sudden came to light when you were in the ministry that you wish you would have dealt with there? And so because of the realities of ministry, a lot of things happened that you weren't planning for. And so did things change as you went out?
Yeah, of course. I mean, all the myriad of issues. I would say two things. Number one is I wish that I had sorted out rejection issues, because if you don't, I think we talked about this a few weeks back, is that ministry becomes torturous, because everything you take as a vote on your worth. People didn't come tonight. You know, I'm worthless. The offering was low. You know, someone left the church. Everything is a vote. So you make life harder, much harder. That's why I stress to people deal with rejection. The second thing is in my marriage is how I viewed my wife and the priority that I put on her. I did not have sorted out well, and so that caused me more conflict. It was some years down the road before I sorted that out. So those are two things that I off the top of my head, those are things that if I'd have worked on before, I'd have been much smarter to do. I'm sure that there probably are hundreds, but those are two main ones, yeah.
So the rejection thing, man, it would put you in a situation where you'd almost have to be, which is good, but be involved in other people's lives and converts and evangelism, or that's where the rejection issues would become light, correct? Or no? Obviously, they'd be necessary.
That's where the people, the what?
Being involved with other people's lives, you know, converts, getting into evangelism, that's where the rejection issues would come to light?
Well, rejection is about your worth, right? It's about your self-image. Mm-hmm. How do you rejection, for whatever reason, if someone has rejected us in life, regardless, whether that's your parents, you know, teacher, you know, whatever, love, wherever in life, that really is somehow you've gotten a message about your worth. What are you worth? And so that is transferred to your self-image. How do you see your worth? To someone who's rejected, everything in life becomes a competition. Who's the greatest? Why are they saying that? Because it's a matter of worth. And everything becomes a referendum. So literally everything in life, you know, taking, so it you take things more personal than they need to be. You have guys that they are destroyed that someone backslid. So you have to love people, but I'm going to sleep at night whether people live for God or not, because that's not, they have to make their own decisions, right? If you're operating from rejection, it's like they rejected me. I somehow failed them. They wanted to get stoned to get laid. I mean, come on, it's not difficult. It's not rocket science. So, you know, so there are, but things like that on, you know, the crowds were big. I'm now worth something. I immediately get on the phone and give them the racetrack figures, or the services were low, so I don't talk to anybody. I don't answer the phone. You know, so I'm everything literally becomes a, is it becomes about me rather than about them. That's the torment of rejection. That I'm not worthy of Jesus? No, that's two very different things. So, first of all, you are accepted by God. That's a salvation issue that has nothing to do with your performance. Whether you're doing good, whether you're doing bad, God still loves you. That has nothing to do with you. What, do we deserve that? We don't ever deserve it. You know, if you do wonderful things for years on end, you still don't deserve it. So it has nothing to do with deserving God's love. That is based wholly and solely on grace. This is a practical expression of my relationship and my obedience to God. So he who loves Father, it's a simple matter of priority, right? So if I, there's practical aspects. When my father-in-law wanted to sleep with his girlfriend at my house, so if I loved my father-in-law more than Jesus, I would go, oh well, it doesn't matter. Doesn't matter, the Bible says that that's wrong. I'm not going to say anything. So that would be a practical, or I would want to please, you know, hey, all right, we won't go to conference because you want us to go out with you for dinner. Then I would be loving family more than Jesus. That's a that has nothing to do with being worthy. My worthiness isn't based on what I do. Yeah, I think you are. Yeah, you're misunderstanding as affection. He's saying two things that you have affection for. You do love family. He doesn't say, I don't want you to love family. Even in the verses that say hate, but the context explains what that means. Is it has to do with priority. I value God more than your opinion of me, so therefore I put him first. That's love. So that's why he says in this verse, if you love them more, whatever you love, you'll put first, right? And so that's the issue. I don't know if that makes it any clearer, Daniel.
You mentioned earlier how you struggled early in your ministry to prioritize your wife. Mm-hmm. Was it more just you were so focused on, you know, building the church, kind of justifying,
In ministry, yes, but this is one of the mistakes. I have to counsel wives sometimes who are upset at their husbands and they're blaming the ministry. They resent the ministry because my husband puts the ministry before. But let's get real. If your husband wasn't in the ministry, he'd be doing that with football, with his car, with guns, with his job. That's a heart issue. It doesn't have to do with what you're doing in life. Yes, it manifested in my in the ministry, yes, as I did put other things. But the real issue was it was the value that I placed on my wife and the value expressed to her. So I resented her needs, that she needed anything. But that's... And so the ministry did that. I could spiritualize it and say, woman, I'm doing a work for God. I don't have time to talk to you. These are the things of God. But that's a heart issue. That's in you, no matter what you do in life. And so guys who are not in the ministry are doing that with their job, their hobbies, their, you know, other interests. So you just have to settle your worth, and to make your wife understand that she is your priority in life. So, and that, the problem is, as this is over the years, as you've heard me say this, is the problem is I can't give you percentages. It's not a matter of your wife gets, you know, 37%. The ministry gets. It's not that way. It's more a matter of. It's more a matter of your. The literally the value that you place upon her, and how you express that. That may go up and down as far as the practical needs. But, you know, for most guys, is that when they first were dating their wife, she was their number one priority full time. And that's what made you attractive to her, is she felt loved. And then for most people, once they get married, they don't treat their wives that way anymore. They treat them as second, third rate, resenting that they need anything. And that's why their wife then hates what they're doing or winds up hating them. So you have to still show your wife that you value her more than anything else.
You have to acquire an awareness to be able to gauge, like, you know, how's my wife doing?
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know,
dwell with your wives according to understanding. Right? So that's why, you know, any of you that have come in for counseling, I've asked some practical questions. Are you a stuffer or an exploder? Right? That's examining. So how do you treat conflict? And then how do you feel loved? Was a question I ask people when they're in counseling. What makes you feel loved? One person, I love it when you say, and you say, and you say, and you say, and the other person, I love it when you go to work and you know fix the leaky faucet. Well, that's two different values. So if to you it's love, I love, I love, I love, I love, but I've been asking you to fix the leaky faucet for 7.5 years, you're kind of missing the point, right? You know what I mean? That's a practical understanding. Every woman's different. Every woman needs different things. So you got to work out. Yeah, that's your job, is to find out, what does my wife need? Right? And the guy who says, I don't have any clue what my wife needs, that's not true. She's told it to you thousands of times. You're just not listening. Okay. So good questions there, guys.